Good morning, everyone. It's Randy McLean at Waypoint, and I'm delighted to be able to get together once again. This is going to be a different kind of brief from what we've been doing in the past. It's really aimed at executive teams, we would envision, or certainly what I envisioned as I was planning this, was that senior teams would get together and use this or share this together as the beginning of a planning or strategy session, and may wind up being integrated, or parts of it would be integrated back into your 2021 strategic plan and budget, so that 2021 could be a record year. The thing that we're trying to address is the nature of companies. They tend to, left on their own, they'll stay in stasis. Whatever happened yesterday will happen today, and the same thing will happen tomorrow. Normally that's a good thing because the doors open and sales are made and money is collected, but it can be a bad thing because the market is changing and companies in stasis are not very responsive to the market. Tend to keep doing the things that have worked, even when they don't necessarily work anymore. So the proper role of the leadership in every company is to break the stasis by looking at where the company needs to be, where the market's going, so that the company can be there as the market arrives, and to periodically look at everything that you do and say, is this the right thing? Is this the, does this still work, or is it still the best way of doing deliveries, or the best way to organize the warehouse, or the best way of running the sales organization? And challenging everything is the benefit that you get when you bring in new blood. And if you're not bringing in new blood, then you have to be your own new blood, looking at that. If you don't do this, and there's a real tendency to get dragged down into the dumpster fires of the day, then you wind up doing things that other people can do, and you're not doing the things that only you can do, and that's basically make the shape the company for its future. And so this is a really vital activity that's ongoing at the top of every company, and companies that don't do enough of this will certainly suffer as other companies pass them by. So today's a reminder of these kinds of things, and the idea is to bring into focus some of the things that are vital at the very top level of the company on an ongoing basis, not just now, but starting now and going on for all time. Okay, the best way to benefit from today's session is that the leadership team participates. Hopefully you and the decision makers at the top of your company are in this session. If not, we're recording it, and you'll be able to review it. You can set up a session where you can make the first 30 or 40 minutes of your meeting basically an input from us, and giving you some ideas that you may not already have on your radar, or maybe reinforcing or validating some of the things that you do. And then following on after this, discussing the kinds of things that you're going to do going forward to implement some of the ideas and concepts coming up in here. Hopefully you're going to be making notes on the ideas that apply and that could use or need action in your company. After this, I would expect that because you'd like to be executing on multiple items at once, rather than having the whole team working on everything, you're going to get much better results if individual people can use their areas of expertise to make their own contributions, and you can be developing simultaneously a number of plans, or a number of change plans that all can be executed at the same time. Don't forget to enlist the members of your team, your broader team, and your partners in the marketplace in order to affect these changes, because everything we're suggesting is good for everyone. Vendors, your company, your customers, and virtually all of the stakeholders in the business. And then, of course, don't forget to have a good timeline for execution. Ideally, you want to do it now, because the more of the year that you have working at a higher efficiency or a higher productivity, the bigger the result you're going to get for the year. Don't forget, when you're doing this, to protect the core. There's certain things that you do well right now that are very important to your cash flow and profitability. Certainly, It's important to make change, but it's important to be smart about it so that whatever you're changing doesn't disrupt your core. And then, of course, when you build on your successes, everybody's happier about what they're doing. All right, here's a session outline for today. We're going to look at the attributes of high-performance companies, the companies that have a superior, or in most cases, a far superior profit rates to the average company and perhaps to your company. And we'll tell you the things that we've discovered that they're doing that set them apart and propel them into those upper echelons. That for the most part, these are things that every company can do, but most companies are distracted with other things. And as they shift into these things, they can start to reap the benefits in terms of cash flow. We're going to talk about the conversion chain, and there's a couple of conversion chains that go into the company. This is high-level thinking, and it's a new a standard for looking at what's going on in the business. It's a framework for thinking. If the leadership team in a company is always thinking within this framework, you're more likely to stay focused on the things that are going to make a difference. And this is the thing that's going to put you in a position a year from now, looking back at how different you are from where you were and how different you are from your competitors. And this is going to be something you're going to be able to take some pride in, and you're certainly going to accrue a number of benefits from. We're going to look at the importance of efficiency. This is kind of a lost term. Everybody thinks about efficiency from time to time, but it really is the core of a company's ability to produce cash flow and profit. And so we're going to bring that a little bit more light onto that in today's session. And as a companion, there's also the importance of productivity, which is one of the mechanisms that's used to produce efficiency. And we're going to talk about how we measure and monitor that and some of the things you can do. We're going to look at some of the performance analytics that are used for this and a few of the tools in Waypoint. We want to highlight those things so you know where to go to get the information to track really the critical elements of today's discussion so that you can immediately start to look for the bright spots and the problem areas. And then as you start to execute on your plans, you can watch and see how those things change. And then finally, we want to make sure that we integrate concierge customer service into this. Whenever we do change, we want to make sure that we're protecting our core business, that we're not in some way disrupting the relationships or the flow that we have with the best accounts that we have. And we also want to find business reasons that give us a competitive advantage in the marketplace. And we're looking for durable advantages that we can maintain over time that will certainly and perceivably and set us apart from the competition so that we have it's easier for us to acquire the best accounts in the market and we absolutely become the best choice to supply the people in the market that basically consume our products and services. Okay, so a couple things to take a look at where we're aiming at. Surprising new metrics, and we're looking back through our history. We've been in business for about 13 years, and a lot has changed in the marketplace at that time. And I think we were drawn into the market by the opportunity to take a deeper look at the numbers that drive businesses, to be able to assemble and share those numbers and make those things available to our clients. As companies generally, not just due to Waypoint, but are using business intelligence, which is sort of like the little brother to what we do, profit analytics, which is what we do, and are becoming more numbers driven. The management is more professional and looking at a broader range of things that absolutely affect the business, getting off of, you know, the three things that used to matter or the only things that we had at the time. The things we're talking about have always mattered, but you couldn't see them. And in the old days, running a business on margin and inventory returns, receivables turns, those kinds of things were important. At the financial end, we're looking at various kinds of ROI. And those were kind of the results of what we were doing, but they were difficult to influence directly, and now we're kind of blunt instruments when we're trying to get the business to a higher level. Nowadays, we have so many more metrics so many more things we can use, and there's so many more companies taking advantage of it that we're starting to see the results of that across the market. So when we started the business, the top tier companies were making, on average, the very best companies were making about 11.5%, or converting 11.5% of the revenue into bottom line. Nowadays, the top companies are converting more than a quarter of their business into bottom line. And this may seem impossible when you're looking at a 25 margin and so on in your business, but it actually is absolutely doable. Most companies can easily make above 15 if they just got focused and were willing to make the changes. Companies that are in the right position, have the right market position, have the right customer mix, and sometimes are graced by having special product lines that are not yet so competitive, those that higher margins are allowable, can do quite a bit higher than that. And so after today, our intent is to give you and your team all the tools to be able to get to the top of the league. Now, here's what's kind of different about today. And in fact, these numbers, in fact, are about a year old. Whereas in the early days, there was very few companies in the upper echelons. Now, more than a quarter of all companies are converting revenue into bottom line at a 15% or higher rate. And this is something that we never expected. Well, now, it was hard to think that that could happen 10 years ago, and now it's pretty much the landscape that we participate in. If you're not one of the companies that's doing this, it means there's a great deal of opportunity for you to become one of these companies. And if you are one of these companies, then other people are catching up, and it's time for you to move up to the higher levels. But I think for most management teams, it's a surprise to know that a quarter of the market is already performing at a 15% NBT or higher rate. And this is very gratifying for us. And we're very pleased that Waypoint companies are amongst these, and in fact, probably make up the lion's share of these in some ways. And so we feel good about what we've been able to do in terms of contributing to our client's success. All right, so let's get into it. We did some analysis a while back, and we were looking at the companies that were in the 20-plus percentage profit range. And we wanted to know what it was about those companies that made them different. In fact, what were the drivers of that success? What was it that made them so efficient in what they did that they produced more profit per dollar than most companies did? And the first element was all of the companies were in this, were really, really good at the core competence of distribution, and that's moving product. And so we were looking at companies that were not large on the scale of things, but they looked like Amazon. They had reduced walk times in the warehouse. They were had people that were analyzing all the things that they did in terms of the logistics. And remember, a distribution company is at its core a logistics business. What distributors do is they move product from manufacturers to consumers or to ultimate users. They provide a certain amount of consolidation in the marketplace for both the vendors and their customers. And for that reason, distribution will never be supplanted. Because there's no other way to get those efficiencies in the marketplace. And the best companies are really, really good at the core activity, which is basically moving, organizing, and delivering product to customers. And so these companies made investments in automation, and you'll see conveyors, you'll see a lot less walk time in the warehouses. They thought carefully about what has to go into a shipping container and how they can reduce the amount of manpower, time, and cost that's involved in making that happen, how they can reduce the amount of material that is required to make that happen, how they can reduce the logistics events along the way in terms of number of orders they have to handle, number of deliveries that they have to make per unit of product product value that is moved. And that has resulted in them being very, very good at the core competency, and that's moving product. The second thing that we discovered is that these companies were very aggressive about restricting the number of locations that they had, in particular, the number of inventory carrying locations or storage locations. Every time you duplicate an inventory storage location, and in the old days when transportation options were few and very expensive, it was usually the best method to move the inventory closer where the customer was, so you could give good service and fast delivery. And nowadays, the world has changed a lot, and that's not so important. You can still achieve those things without having to have inventory in so many places. Whenever you have duplicated inventory, particularly when it's in your own facilities, you have duplication of inventory, duplication of manpower, duplications of all kinds of support costs that absolutely you would not have if you could trade those costs for a different kind of transport cost in order to make sure the delivery events still happen, the product is still where it needs to be when it needs to be there, but you don't have so much duplication elsewhere in your system. And this has been something that we've seen happen a lot over the last 10 years. There's a great deal of consolidation going on. Some of the best accounts that that we have, our clients are doing things like going to a regional supply situation. They're leaving sales offices where they need to contact customers, and there's more about that later. But they're not having so much inventory duplicated out in the field, and they're not driving high costs in the intra-company transfer of inventory between locations in order to suit that model. So this is a very important element of moving into the upper echelons. If you have inventory every place that you sell, unless you have an issue where the inventory doesn't cube out well, so you can't transport it very far efficiently, then you're unless you're in one of those businesses, you are not going to be able to get into the upper echelons if you have too many locations. The next thing is that these companies are moving to a future sales model. The selling is the last field of human endeavor where you eat what you kill. And a lot of companies still work on the model that came out of the 1900s. That's not the way the top companies operate anymore. There's a lot of specialization, and we've all started down this track. We don't have the salespeople responsible for the website. We have website people responsible for the website. We usually have somebody who's focused on e-commerce taking care of e-commerce. We have customer service people that take care of customer service and those kinds of things. It's not efficient enough, and it's too expensive for an organization to have a high power, high price sales rep now that is doing lead generation, prospecting, appointment setting, customer service, collections. They're not particularly, nobody can be good at all of those things in addition to the core selling role. And so what happens is wherever you have an organization where a single person is responsible for that entire chain, then you're no better off than if you had a warehouse person who's responsible for selling, order entry, doing the warehousing, delivering the product, and so on. You just can't do it. And we moved out of that in the product organization and the product movement area. We need to move out of that in the sales area as well. A lot better to have a single staff person that does nothing but lead generation and appointment setting. So salespeople are always busy, and you're high-powered, most effective, most persuasive salespeople are spending all their time on persuasion. And so building a future sales model will help a lot. In the top level companies, they have a very, very small sales force in the traditional sense. Most companies have one or two people that are responsible for cracking accounts and handling the personal interaction with the biggest and most important accounts. And all the rest of the sales process is automated or handled by salaried people that specialize in whatever element of that that there is. And that's a very important model, and it's a sea change in distribution. The companies that are slow to move there are going to have a very, very difficult time making up the lost ground that other companies are capturing right now. And in the meantime, whenever they have somebody that is not good at any one of those steps in the sales chain, they run the real risk that important business that they have from important clients is going to get poached by companies that are more adroitly handling whatever element that is, whether it's the prospecting element, the customer service element, or whatever the other things are, or even the sales cracking element, where you have a C-level rep basically bungling the relationship with an A account. So this is very, very important, and it's one of the attributes of the companies that are at the top of the league. The next thing that is important is, and is quite related, is to make sure that you're focused on customer experience. And we don't use the term customer service anymore because in the industry, at Waypoint, we don't think of it as customer service because in the industry, that whole term has been hijacked to represent the people that take orders. Those are order entry people, but we call them customer service people because they also answer the phone when the customer has a problem. But what you're trying to build is customer experience. We have been bemoaning the loss of customer loyalty across time. And the reason why is that because the market has sort of tamped down and crushed down our ability to do things that are meaningfully different to the customer. Our prices are kind of the same because the margins have been eroded. Competitive pressures will squeeze any excess margin out of the business, particularly with companies that are run on margin or thinking and focused primarily on margin. Then margin is going to evaporate. We don't have a better service offering in many places because we have the same products as other people, and we don't deliver them any differently than we used to. You know, we have a truck that goes out periodically and gets products into people's hands, and hopefully without too many errors. The customer experience boils down to what is it like to deal with us, and we're going to come back to that in a bit. Customer experience is vital to your ability to move ahead and to create durability and sustainability out of the advantages that you're going to create in the other things that we're talking about. And then finally, companies are getting very, very numbers driven. The top companies always have dedicated people that are doing analytics. They're looking at various aspects of how the company is running, looking at the numbers, providing services to the decision makers. In some cases, they are the decision makers. Top companies usually have a senior analyst or even a chief profit officer. You've heard many companies. In fact, you may have chief revenue officers. We're not thinking of them as sales VPs anymore. We're thinking about they're starting to think about more what is the function of the role. And a chief profit officer or director of profitability is a role that we find in the top companies. They have an analyst with an analytics system that is used so that they are spending their time thinking about how things are going to improve and what are the problem areas and opportunities within the company. Too many companies have an analyst, and all that is a glorified number cruncher. And having an analyst without an analytics system is like having an accountant without an accounting system. If your accountant is going to spend all their time in ledger sheets writing numbers down, they're not going to be in a position to be able to provide guidance and information and intelligence to the decision makers so that they can focus on the things that are going to matter. And the same thing happens with analytics. If your analyst is spending all their time gathering numbers and adding them together in spreadsheets, it's unlikely that any benefit is going to come out of that. The top companies have recognized this and are working towards the future with that knowledge and taking full advantage of that, especially against competition that doesn't have that capability. Okay, so let's talk about a few things that are important for the leadership team. The first thing is an absolute fresh perspective on how you view what goes on in the company. We spend so much of our time dragged down into the dumpster fire of the day that we're really, really good at understanding and dealing with dumpster fires. The problem is we need a wider, broader perspective than that. And so the first thing that is important is understanding what the purpose of a company is. And the purpose of a company, the reason why the company was founded was because somebody wanted to be successful, and they wanted to do that by creating a business that would convert inventory or product value into profit. And that's the core purpose of a company. The mission statement is more about how that is done, but the purpose of the company is to convert inventory value into bottom line profit. That's the core purpose of every management team and all the senior leadership in every management team. As a parallel to that, or basically as you take that down a step into your thinking process, every single customer relationship is basically a conversion relationship. Each customer relationship, through its own idiosyncrasies, its own particular attributes, converts inventory value or gross profit value into bottom line at its own rate because of the way that that particular relationship operates. What products are bought, how they buy them, how you handle the logistics chain to make sure that they get to the customer, how you monetize them. So each one of those customer relationships is basically a unit of conversion that goes on in the company. And the ultimate core of it is taking gross profit value, gross profit dollars, and converting them to NBC or profit dollars. And how that's done has everything to do with the value of the relationship, not just to the company, but also to the customer and to the vendor. So those conversion relationships, you should always be looking on for, I can move this much product value to this customer and I can get this much profit for having done so. And how does that compare to another customer? They could be in the same industry, they could be arch competitors, or they could be completely different, but they could be just as equally efficient at turning that product value into profit. So you're going to be thinking about your logistics chain internally, and your thoughts of what you do at the senior end is taking a look at how it is that you operate and how much you can get done in that what are all of those individual product flows going to all of those customers. Part of the job of the senior leadership team is to optimize logistics productivity and efficiency. Okay, so let's talk about efficiency. Efficiency basically boils down to op cash value per expense dollar that you have. That's really the formula. And for whatever you're doing, I can move this much gross profit value. And those gross profit we talk about as operating cash. Why is that? Because you have to pay for the product. This is the money left after you paid for the product. Or in the cases where you're assembling or manufacturing the product, this is the money you have left after you created the product and it's in inventory for you to sell. So, you have inventory and you've sold it to the customer. This is how much money you have after you paid for either your production expenses or for the procurement expenses for the product. And it's basically money that you have to write checks against. And so how you spend that money in terms of spending it on personnel, spending it on outside services, spending it on anything you have to write checks for, sales commissions and so on, is important. And whatever's left over is what you get to keep. So moving more value per dollar means that you're going to have more profit that you can use for reinvestment or return to the stakeholders or charity or whatever is important to you. Okay, so it's important for to be measuring and improving efficiency metrics all through your value chain inside the company and looking at operational efficiency. It's also important, or it's an indicator of the customer relationship efficiency. And so efficiencies on all these things matter. If you are good at those things, if you're managing them and raising them, you get an automatic benefit in improved customer experience. Customers are going to get their product more often, more frequently, fewer back orders, on a more timely basis. If you're good at what you do on those other ends, that drives all of that. It also is going to enhance your customer relationships because customers are going to soon realize that you're the best game in town. If they want to be efficient, if they don't want to disappoint their customers, if they want their projects to work smoothly, if you're efficient at what you do, you're going to have a reputation for being a better choice for them. All right, so a sister metric is productivity, and productivity is basically any kind of an activity unit divided by manpower hours. So it's, you know, the number of orders that can be processed, the amount of gross profit dollars that can be packed and shipped, the amount of product that could be picked, all of these things divided by the number of manpower hours that you have. And of course, manpower hours is a surrogate and drives costs. But wherever you can improve that particular metric, then your profitability is going to increase because the efficiency of whatever this is measuring is going to increase. So productivity basically gets away. It's a companion measure. Efficiency measures dollar value. This measures activity value or activity ratios. So it drives manpower efficiency, as I said. And in order to achieve this, you want to revise internal processes to make sure that these things can happen. Eliminating walk time in the warehouse, reorganizing your products so that the same product that goes together gets into the same container, that it takes less time to assemble it. So there's less manpower hours involved in doing it. And so on, organizing your delivery routes so there's less time wasted moving between customer locations. And these are not new things, but to bring into focus, these things matter at the top level. In order to do this, you need to engage people at all levels. You know, your driver knows exactly what the stupid stuff that he's been forced to do is. He even knows probably how to fix it, but probably nobody's asking him. And there's a wealth of information. And if you give people, if you empower people to make changes or make suggestions they get acted on, you raise morale, you get more engagement, and company gets better because more brains are engaged in making it better. And of course, it's important to use incentives to drive engagement. If a warehouse manager is paid a salary, he's going to come and do what he does, and product goes or doesn't go. It doesn't make a lot of difference to him. If he's measured on how much product value is moved per manpower dollar that is spent, then he's thinking about how he's going to raise those ratios, which is going to give you the ability to pay raises annually and not have to take it by reducing the bottom line of the company, because you've got a manager out there thinking how he can get more product value moved with less manpower hours or less manpower dollars. And he's basically making a bigger buffer in that number and making a better spread. So you have some incremental dollars at the end of the year that you can invest in those on those increases in manpower or benefits costs and so on, instead of taking a hit to the bottom line and eroding the bottom line of the company. All right, so just a few analytics and tools that you can use. I think these are vital. These are things that are not commonly enough engaged right now by companies that are not in the upper echelons. Profit value segmentation is vital because it helps separate the wheat from the chaff in terms of the customers. It helps you focus your efforts, your energies on the customers that are most important, and shows you where to work on the customers that are hurting you. Minimum order quantities are a game changer in the business right now. It's something we learned from certain industries where they're really good at this, and almost everybody can benefit from this. And we have whole sessions that we talk about this. But MOQs will absolutely reduce the number of small orders, will directly address the small order issue that you have across the board without salespeople having to get engaged in individual relationship discussions with customers, they will make substantial reductions in the amount of dead inventory that you produce in the business. It's an absolute game changer with some really super powerful new tools to be able to address that. We've made webinars to explain it, and we'd be happy to do personal sessions with anybody that wants to engage with this, because this absolutely will change the nature of your 21 business. Credits and below cost sales are something that's hidden. Most companies aren't really aware of the impact of that. That's huge. Vendor relationship metrics, getting back to the core. If you go back 40 years, distribution companies were really, really good at negotiating with vendors. They had professional buyers doing this kind of thing. Many companies still do, but it's not as prevalent across the industry, and we've lost our edge in that, and it's something we can bring back and do really well. And then finally, op cash ratios, operating cash ratios, can really help you address some of the things we were talking about a moment ago in terms of productivity and efficiency. Just have a quick look at it, customer segmentation for profit value. High leverage accounts are your most profitable accounts. They convert inventory value or gross profit dollars, operating cash dollars, into bottom line at a much higher rate than any of your other customers. The more of these you have, the higher the bottom the profit rate of the company will be. The other half of your platinum group are the high efficiency accounts. You service them at less dollars per value going out the door than any other. And these two accounts are basically will drive the success of your business, and they're the best growth targets. The small accounts, money-making and money-losing small accounts, drive a lot of your small order issues. There's really great ways of addressing them. You need to know who they are. And then as you implement programs and systems changes and policy changes to affect this, you need to monitor them and make sure that it's working properly and you're getting the return that you want. So the segmentation model is vital to all of that. Finally, the profit drain accounts, the few accounts that are absolutely siphoning money off your bottom line, it has to be addressed. The company, you can improve the profitability within those accounts with some work, or you can price them so that they wind up leaving and going to other to your competition where it's much, much better. If nobody can make money on these accounts, much better that they're in the hands of a competitor and you're focusing your resources on someone else. Minimum order quantities. This is a one of the report sheets that we produce. It shows for each product, and this whole blue block is a single SKU. It shows at each pick quantity how many times it was picked at that quantity. Shows all the profit and op cash and revenue metrics all the way along the chain for each of those, and shows what the profit rate is at each one of those levels. And the idea is to find the places where we're shipping in quantity one, you always are guaranteed to lose money at that, and maybe you set the minimum to quantity two or quantity four or something like that. And there's a big session that we do. We have webinars, and we'll send you after the follow-up probably tomorrow some links to the different webinars that we have where we talk about this in detail. We'd be happy to do individual private sessions on these things with you and your team so that we can walk you through these things and you can get started on it, because you can change your results in December if you do something today and tomorrow to act on this. And this is a game changer. This absolutely will change the whole nature of your business. Credits and below cost sales is something else that people are not. It's an invisible killer to distribution businesses. This company has made $4 million in sold, delivered, collected, clean sales out to the customers. These are sales that are exclusive of returns and credits and exclusive of below cost sales, where we're liquidating or making mistakes where we're selling below cost. Unfortunately, their returns have taken $850,000 off the bottom line, taken out of those profits that they already had, because credits are deadly. You have all the costs of selling the product, moving to the customer. You have all the costs of bringing back and nothing to show for it. And so this is brutal. They've also sold they've lost $800,000 on products that they sold below cost, either liquidating inventory, mistakes in their entry, and they're selling products at prices that they don't intend. But there's something wrong, because they're losing money right at the gross profit level, unless they've taken another $850,000 off. So they basically lost $1.8 million in credits and below cost sales, leaving them only $2.1 million out of a $4 million original bottom line that they had on business that they've actually done. And this is just because they've had a very small amount. Out of $27 million in sales, they got $950,000 in credits, and they have $250,000 worth of stuff that they sold below cost, and it's cut their profits in half. This is one of the first places you want to look, because this is a place that's easy to manage. If you can reduce the credits and the low-cost sales by 25%, you can put an enormous amount of money on the bottom line. We're talking most companies, hundreds of thousands, some cases billions of dollars can go on the bottom line if you just get in control of this. And in most companies, this is not being managed, because without Waypoint, or if you're not using the right parts of Waypoint, your team doesn't even know this is an issue. Vendor relationship metrics we talked about before, just a couple of elements. If you're getting rebates from certain vendors, you can capitalize on the rebates and make sure that you're getting, you can try and negotiate for better rebates from the vendor. You can also shift your sales into the rebated product, so that you're going to get more of that, that money coming back to you, for having moved product that's on rebates. And you can also share the rebate values between competing vendors and get them to increase the rebates that they'll pay for you. The other thing that's vital is freight in. If you're buying significant quantities of anything from somebody, you should be able to negotiate for prepaid freight. And this is a really, really important thing, because there's at a 5% profit rate, there's a 20-to-1 leverage in doing this. $10,000 out of freight reductions or increased rebates is the same as $200,000 of new sales for the business. And so, can't emphasize enough how much money can be made on the back end of the business through capable and focused negotiation on the vendor side of the business on just these two elements. And so we have some reporting here that can show you how the different vendors compare and what the relative benefits of these things are. Finally, with the op-cash ratios report helps you understand exactly the efficiency that you have at different parts of your logistics chain. So for instance, we can see that in this particular period, the warehouse is moving $6.44 of value for every dollar that's being spent in the warehouse. When we look at that across the whole year, we can see that that number is dropping. And this is going to put the company in a difficult position, because what's happening is the warehouse across time is getting less and less efficient. And then at year end, the new year, we're going to be looking at making pay increases, giving annual increases to people. And because the warehouse is doing a poorer job of moving inventory value, it's going to come out of the bottom line of the company. It's just basically going to flat out reduce the cash flow and profits of the company. And the warehouse itself is unmanaged in this sense, and is not doing anything to not only contribute or at least hold the line on the problem, or better still, building some efficiency gains so it's self-funding its own increases. So if this was going the opposite direction, the company would be saying, gee, we're going to take that money out of increased profitability we're making in the warehouse operation. But I'm just saying we're making less money in the warehouse, and then we're going to pay everybody raises, which is what's going on. So you can look at that at each step of the logistics chain in this report. Same thing for delivery expenses. It's going the wrong direction, and deliveries are not doing anything. They're going to make the world better and certainly help fund their own increases. Okay, finally, the concierge customer service is vital. And most companies think they're pretty good at customer service because, you know, they can remember the times that somebody pulled all the stops and rescued something. But frankly, every company can't have above average service. It's mathematically impossible. And if you're not evaluating what it's like to do business with you on a regular basis, it's unlikely that your customer service is improving. It's probably declining through attrition and neglect. And so every company needs a concierge service capability. And what we're thinking of is, when we talk about concierge customer service, is we're trying to think about it being a high level of customer service, and it's focused and limited to the platinum accounts. It's a different level of customer service. It's not just that we'll fix your problem if you buy from us and we screw it up. It's more along the lines that if you're a top account and you have a bid, we're going to help you win it. We're going to go back and get a better price for you from the vendor so that you can make sure that your business increases. And at the same time, it's self-serving because our business will increase. We have things that we will do for the accounts where we make a lot of money and we can afford to fund those additional things. Normally you need a small dedicated team to make this happen, and you need to look at your logistics. You can't have your top accounts playing 20 questions with your phone system, trying to figure out how they're going to get to somebody that's going to solve their problem. They need their own private number that a person answers without any of that stuff going on, knows their name and takes care of them. And then once you have that, you can market the capability, and that translates back into making it easier for the sales force to do the job, because they're not just coming and saying, well, I got a box of donuts and I know about the local sports team. They're saying, hey, we can help you get better pricing on bids. We can help you get better or specific deliveries while you have special needs. We can give you better pricing because you're a very efficient account, and we can share the savings on the deliveries with you, so you can get pricing from us you can't get from other people. And they have business reasons to do business with you. It makes their job easier, but more importantly, it makes them more productive. They're bringing you more business. All right, so your action plan after this, continuing in a few minutes when I take my leave, is to identify bright spots and challenges in the company. Make sure that you always, always protect the core. Any change that you make, policies and whatnot, you're always thinking about what that means to your top accounts, even if it should apply to your top accounts, and make sure they're protected from from confusion and disruption that may be necessary in other places to move them to a higher level. Make sure that you're working on the biggest and most likely successful items. And make sure that you're working on several things simultaneously. A number of things are happening all at once, rather than you're not getting around to doing that customer service thing until 2024 because you're too busy doing all these other things one at a time. Make sure that you're focused on actual and sustainable change, and get going right now. It's nice to have theory, but everybody will forget about it and going back to dumpster fires. And if you do that, other people are going to pass you by and you're going to have to pay catch up. And that's always difficult and expensive. So remember, core competence is moving product. Your restricting locations is going to help. You have a different view of the world. It's going to help you take advantage of other transport options and whatnot, and it's going to reduce your inventory investment, and it's going to make more efficient use of the inventory that you have. Moving to a future sales model is going to make your sales force more effective, and if you can combine that with concierge customer service and focused new activities for your HLA and HEA accounts, so your platinum account group, then you're going to give them more business reasons for people to come to you rather than the competition, and it's going to be easier for them to bring in sales gains. Obviously, that's all going to be driven by having an increased customer experience, and so that'll be something else the sales team will be able to market. And then don't forget to measure everything you're doing to make sure it's working. If it's not working, then go back and find out why, or decide that you're not going to do that and work on something else that is producing a result. So you don't wind up with zombie programs where somebody's decided to do something and doesn't wind up making any difference, but it's consuming resources and focus and energy and may even be hurting other things. Change is hard, no question about it. And this is something that every team needs to be recognized. You're going to have pushback. You're going to have people that think things were fine yesterday and have no idea why you think they need to change tomorrow. But I think that Eric Shinseki said this best. I think this is, a brilliant guy. And I think this is one of the most important things that we can learn from him. You know, if you dislike change, you're going to dislike irrelevance even more. And letting your company become irrelevant because you're not good at doing these conversions, because your team isn't superior at these conversions to other companies in the market, means you're going to have less money to spend on training, on customer service, on benefits for customers, on benefits for your people, and so on. And you're going to have less and less market share, because the companies that are good at that are going to take the best accounts. That's going to make it very, very difficult to make money. On the other hand, if you are the company that does that, you will be the 800-pound gorilla in the future. And even giant companies that you may be competing with right now will be scratching their heads and will not know how to catch up with you. And make no mistake, the giant companies can't decide to do something today and have it happen tomorrow. You can. and they won't, and you will, and they're going to be in a position of perpetual catch-up. They have facilities, they have resources, and they're using them against you right now. What you can use is your agility, better thinking and deeper analytics, and more importantly, action to get things done. So those are your durable competitive advantages. Don't forget that you have them, and make sure that you're using them every day, and make sure that the broadest possible section of your entire team is engaged in things that are going to make the company better and make a better user experience for your customers. So don't forget to engage us for help. We'd be happy to have sessions on this or any subsets of these with any of you. Whether you're a Waypoint client or not, we'd be delighted to talk to you. Of course, we would prefer that you were using Waypoint so you had the tools to do the job. And for those of you that have Waypoint, don't fail to engage us in these kinds of things. We're here to help. It's part of what you pay us to do, and we'd be delighted to contribute to your success. So thanks a lot. Thank you for your time today. Hope you carry on with discussion of this starting right now. And I'm looking forward to being a contributor to your success.